Come over here, kid. Where's some? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. What a beautiful weekend, huh? Glorious spring weather, so many pretty scents in the air, so many events to attend this weekend. It was hard to know where to be or where you were. I hope you got to see at least one of the parades. My guest this evening, we have two, on one hand, divergent topics, but I think we will also see some intersection between them as well. First, we have Seema Bhatte of Rugs of Persia. Welcome to Mouthful. We have Grayson James. And what's your organization called again, Grayson?
I'm with Petaluma Bounty.
That's right. Oh, I was right. It was Petaluma. I'm not too tired. I was going to say that, and I thought I'd be wrong. So Grayson James of Petaluma Bounty and Lisa
Ludwigson. And I'm also with Petaluma Bounty.
And you all are working on sort of a CSA project that in part will be accessible to low-income families, is that correct?
Yeah, that's an important part of what we're working on. Uh-huh. We also have an educational urban farm, a network of community gardens, and a food gleaning program in Petaluma.
Great. So we're going to hear, I have a few questions for Seema, and then we're going to come back to you. But Seema, first, you know, you're going to hear some noises, because I want to turn your microphone, because I want to get you there. Now I can see your beautiful face. One of the ways that I first got to know you is that you do this event that's very popular in Sebastopol. Yes, I remember that place. I live there. The Rumi Night.
Right.
A night of poetry. This time it took place on an incredibly rainy night, and it was still absolutely sold out. And
that's
you make
right.
the food there.
Mm-hmm.
You make the food for this event, and it must be, what, 300 people?
We had about 300 people this time, and the reason that we do that, first of all, I love cooking, and cooking is a part of me and my culture, Iranian culture. Also, I love to do some community services. So with providing the food for 300 people for Rumi Karwan, which is my fourth year doing that, a part of it is going to different schools, and a part of the money is going to your radio. So that's the reason.
Oh, that's right.
That
I forgot. It was
exactly.
actually that's
exactly.
right. It was in part a benefit, and I think some
right.
went to Mr. Music.
Exactly.
The ever popular music teacher in
cooking,
West Kennedy.
For 300 people is what I really enjoy, and I do it.
I want you to tell us. I want you to tell us what we had that night, because. I thought all of the dried fruits mm-hmm. and nuts, that whole display, because
mm-hmm.
I know you came up to me and talked to me about that then. And I think that people who know a little bit about Persian food, they don't necessarily know how important those ingredients are.
Right. One of the things that I like to do, I like to set up a table for the traditional food, and then I just set up a table for vegetarian people. The traditional food usually is almond, cheese, feta cheese, lavash bread, different kind of fruit, cucumber, and the major thing is having some kind of date. Date is something that Iranian people have it at least every day if they get a chance, one or two. We do believe that it is full of nutrition. It brings you a lot of energy. The other part that I did was rice. If you remember, the good one was eggplant dish.
Mm-hmm.
As
yeah,
far
delicious
as I remember,
dish.
That was, and also dolma. Dolma is
that's
a
right,
very, very,
and
very
there was
famous one.
A meatball.
Chicken salad we had, and also we had a meatball.
Mm-hmm.
So all of them are the traditional food which comes from Iran. Reason for that is because when Rumi was alive, traditional food was what he loved to have it, and it was more common.
Mm-hmm.
By
well, then,
his time.
Without food
right.
being shipped long distances, it was your only, you know, if you were eating
right.
it was regional and in
right.
season.
By his time, meat was not very popular, which mm-hmm. is not today either.
Mm-hmm. Now, do we know why?
Mainly for the diet,
okay.
for the health.
Okay.
Rumi and Hafez both were supporting the health and the diet very much,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to teach the people by their time what is good for your body and also what's good for your mind.
Mm-hmm. And so they believed that vegetarian was...
the best.
Okay, interesting. I hadn't known that.
Right.
And just for people who have somehow missed this, when was Rumi alive?
Rumi's birthday this last year was 800th birthday.
His 800th birthday.
Right, right.
So there you go, 800 years ago.
800 years
exploring
ago.
Exploring the benefits
exactly.
of a vegetarian diet.
Vegetarian diet, right.
Okay, so you for a long time, as you came here, you eventually got your PhD in education.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And you taught in colleges.
Right. When I came to this country, I had to go to some classes which teach you English as a second language. And then I got my PhD in educational leadership. 10 to 11 years I have experience of teaching in different universities and colleges. So about 6 years ago, I decided that I don't want to be in this field anymore, and I just want to go to the business which can introduce the culture and some kind of art which is in Iran to the world, to the American people. Because of that, I decided to have my own business,
mm-hmm.
The Rugs of Persia. The rugs is a piece of art. Persian rugs is investment. It's a beautiful peace to have it, you know,
mm-hmm.
for in any home. They bring you a lot of health, happiness, health, because most of them are vegetable dye.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to live on chemical.
Mm-hmm.
It's more happiness, color, you know, and the best part of it is that they pass from generation to generation. So I want to introduce that to the American people and make sure that they know about this art,
mm-hmm.
which I'm very happy to do that.
What was it like to make the transition from the academic world to the business world?
Very difficult,
yeah.
to tell you the truth, very difficult, but I wish that I had been in this business from the beginning.
Really?
The reason of that is because I have a lot of love and passion for what I'm doing. Not that I didn't have love or passion for teaching, it's
mm-hmm.
a different kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. And you probably, I would think, meet a greater diversity of people
exactly.
doing what you're doing
exactly.
now.
Exactly, right, right, and talking to diversity people, right.
Uh-huh. Okay, we're going to take a little musical break, and we will be right back. Beautiful Iranian music, Persian music. Thank you, Lawrence. It is Iranian music, and what number was it? Number 8. Okay. I'm not sure what it's called. Anyway, it was a lovely lovely piece in honor of our guest, Simavati of Rugs of Persia, also does the food for Rumi Caravan. And as soon as that song started, Lisa and Yusima, you were talking about a dish. Lisa, I want you to talk about this. It sounds really interesting.
A friend of mine was born in Iran, and she lived there with her family for a while. And she came over and made this beautiful rice dish for my family and I. And she showed me how to make it, and it made such an impression on me. It was, and I was asking about it. So it had these very thin layers of potato on the bottom, the very bottom of the pan, and then this rice was cooked in a very specific way, and it really was kind of ritualistic, the way that it was done, with this kind of a, with a dry kitchen towel inside the pan, and it had to be done exactly so, and it was absolutely delicious. So do you know what that was?
That's called tadik. And it is so good. It's very easy to make. All you need to do is just put a little bit of oil and chop the potato and put it under it. And just when the rice is ready to be cooked, just put the rice on it, top it a little bit of olive oil, and just steam it. So I may have to do it once for you and you to see.
So the rice is, so that's the function of the kitchen towel.
Right.
Is to let the, just the steam come through.
Exactly.
Any spices or anything with it?
For this kind of rice, you only use salt.
Oh, just salt.
But if
oh,
you have vegetable with the rice or some kind of meat with the rice, then you use different kind of spice.
Mm. Well, Seema, so when are you going to bring the Rumi Caravan down to Petaluma?
I have to talk to Larry Robinson. He is the one who coordinated the program. But it's going to be a wonderful idea if we could do it.
Yeah.
Usually it is the second week of February each year in Sebastopol, the first Saturday. But Larry is the person to talk to. I'd be glad to bring that up in a meeting and make sure that he knows the interest.
Oh, yeah, it'd be wonderful.
Be glad to do that.
The caravan should hit the road.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for a really long time.
Yes.
Something like 18 years, I think.
Very long time.
This was the 18th year.
Right, right.
And very well attended.
Very well.
Very well attended. So Grayson,
each year we are almost sold out. You know, it's wonderful.
And clearly the community of Sebastopol and West County loves it, absolutely loves it. Grayson, I wanted now to find out what it is, Petaluma Bounty. Tell me how you got, how did it happen?
How did it happen? Well, Petaluma, we're actually coming on our second year birthday in June this year, and our focus is on making a more sustainable, healthy local food system for Petaluma, where everybody in town has access to healthy food. So we're taking kind of a broad approach. I mentioned we have a network of community gardens that we're creating. We created our fourth, we completed our fourth garden last month.
So there's now four community
gardens? Four new community gardens. There were two community gardens before. These gardens are really primarily focused in lower-income areas. Three of them are at schools, on elementary school campuses, because we think it's really important to engage kids early on in understanding about food, having experience of real food in their lives. And we are in the process of creating an educational urban farm in central Petaluma.
Where will that be?
That is just off of Petaluma Boulevard North, near the Lucky's Shopping Center.
Okay.
We've got a full-time farm manager working on that, and we're partnering with Casa Grande's Culinary Arts Program and Petaluma High, their agriculture program, and we have a food gleaning program called Petaluma Bounty Hunters. And bounty hunters go forth and collect fruit and vegetables from gardens around town, and they bring it to our collection sites. And then when we get a call, we will also send out a food posse. And food posse members go out and they harvest the food from orchards and fields where the property owners need some help.
So it's the property owners will call you and say, I've got all these apples.
If they can't bring them to our collection site, then we'll try and put together a food posse and send them out.
And has that been going on for 2 years?
Yeah, we started in August of 06. And the first year we were really figuring out what we're doing. And even so, we glean more than 20,000 pounds of fresh food.
Wow.
And last summer, we actually were distributing that food 6 days a week to different food pantries and low-income senior housing centers in town. So it's one of these great ideas because folks hate to see their food go to waste.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it hurt. I've had a lot of folks say it just hurts to see that fruit fall on the ground and not know what to do with it. So it's great for folks that have that food, and it's great for folks that need the food that can't afford to buy it fresh anymore.
Mm-hmm. And how is this funded?
We were funded. We have initial seed funding from the Hub of Petaluma Foundation, which is a private foundation, and we're really busy fundraising right now. Individual private donors lining up corporate sponsors and seeking grant funds as well.
Mm-hmm. And you hear a lot from other nonprofits, I do anyway lately, that grant money is really tight these days. So how are you doing? Okay?
Well, yeah, we're doing okay so far. Uh-huh. And, you know, that's a challenge. And,
yeah.
And it's, I agree with those folks. Mm-hmm. It is a challenge. And I think the larger challenge, though, is really getting folks to recognize the importance of a healthy food system. And your last week's show did a good job of sort of laying out the territory. What's really at stake here?
Yeah.
What's at stake with our food system? What's working? What isn't working? You know, we have a lot. The reason we call it Petaluma Bounty is because we have a huge bounty here in Sonoma County. We're really fortunate. There's so much great food around. And the flip side of it is you have to be able to afford it. To be able to take advantage of that bounty, and an increasing number of families simply can't, so they're forced out of the healthy food and have to live on highly processed food, and they're paying the price with their health.
Yeah, highly processed food, and at this point, to me, it seems like local and organic or sustainable organic, you know, having become kind of fuzzy because of federal intervention. It's expensive.
Yeah.
And it's getting more expensive in part because, well, all the reasons we know, the cost of land, the cost of labor, the loss during freezes, and now even going to farmers markets, unless you're going to the farmers market that is in your town really close to you, you're spending a lot of gas going.
Yeah.
So everything is increasing. So if you go to any of the locally owned markets, and I shop at them, you know, I support the markets, but you look at the price, you know, you see potatoes $2.99, $3.99, $5.99 a pound for some nice potatoes grown in Petaluma, and then you see potatoes that are probably laden with chemical, you know, produced.
Who knows what.
For 69 cents a pound. And if you're dealing with the reality of feeding your family, you know, you don't have the luxury of making the choice that a lot of us do have the luxury to make. So I guess that leads me to the question is, how are families accessing what you're doing?
Yeah. Our main interest is in increasing that access and making it easier. So community gardens is one way. And community gardens are great not only because folks can grow what they want to grow at almost no cost, but they actually get to do something together.
And how does a community garden function? Let's just take the example of one.
Yeah. Well, when we start a new community garden, the first thing we do is we pull together neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, in three of our new community gardens, we started with the school where we were going to be building the garden. So we organized planning meetings and had a lot of folks show up, teachers, administrators, and most importantly, the families themselves. Parents and the kids show up, and we talk about where the garden's going to be, how large it's going to be, how we want it laid out. And collaborative, we do the planning, and we pull together different resources. Folks go out and collect donations and materials from whomever they know. And then we have a series of work days where we get together, and we actually build the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And usually within the course of about 2 to 3 good 6-hour work days with anywhere between about 25 and 45 people showing up, we've got the garden done. So then the individual garden plots are essentially held for a year. They're rented
family. Not sure.
So there we have
an individual
a community garden has
plant.
Different plots.
Oh, okay.
So let's say there are 15 or 20 plots to a garden.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of our final work day, when the garden is pretty much done, we have a little lottery. And folks, you know, pull out their slip to see which garden plot they get.
Oh, so each family is maintaining their
plot. So a family gets their own plot. They get to do whatever they can grow whatever they want as long as it's legal.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we really encourage food because that's, you know, that's really what we're about. But flowers are important. And then there's some common areas, too. There's a storage shed common rest teaching area, compost bin, so forth.
Mm-hmm. And then, so each family is then responsible for the maintenance of that particular plot.
Yeah, exactly. And we provide hose bibs that are adjacent to each plot.
And then come harvest, do people share?
Yeah, there's a lot of sharing that goes on. And it's a pretty fluid situation in some of these gardens. Folks kind of take over each other's plots for a while, and they... There's just a lot of camaraderie, a lot of collaboration. So that's one thing that we're doing. Then the other, our newest program is called the Bounty Box. And the Bounty Box is basically a farm box program, a weekly farm box program without the farm. And it's without the farm right now because our farm isn't yet growing food. We just put our first crops in the ground about a week ago.
And that is that the educational
that's
garden?
That's the educational urban farm, the Bounty Community Farm, yeah. But the Bounty Box program... We're starting as a pilot program at McDowell School in Petaluma. And again, we started with the families themselves, and we had a series of planning meetings and determined that we want to do a weekly box, and it's a wholesale box, and it's organic. So we purchase organic produce from a really reputable local distributor.
Can you say which one?
Veritable Vegetable.
Okay.
They've been in the business for more than 30 years, and they're great to work with. And they know everything about all the farms that they work with, so we could actually order specific products from specific farms.
Mm-hmm.
And so the food arrives on a big pallet about 6:30 a.m. on Wednesday mornings, and volunteers are out to meet it. And then another group of volunteers show up around 8 that morning, and we put up the tables in the on the stage of the multipurpose room at the school, and we put out... right now it's about 40 boxes, 40 families are participating, and we fill these boxes with this great produce, and then during the pickup hours of the day, the families come and they pick up their wholesale box for $10.
Oh, for $10.
Yeah.
That's a great price.
It's a great price, and you know, a lot of folks don't think that lower income people are that concerned about things like organic food.
And of course
And I was really surprised. Yeah, I was surprised by the strong feelings that these families reflect. They know what it's about, they know why it's important, and they want it, and they want to pay for it. So by doing it wholesale, we're trying to level the playing field for these families.
And then when the educational garden gets underway, what will be its function?
The educational farm is going to be we're sort of seeing it as the focal point for a healthy Petaluma food system. So we're going to be having kids coming out from the high schools, junior highs, and elementary schools to experience where food comes from and experience with their hands and their bodies what goes into growing food in a sustainable way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be selling produce at around town at farm stands. And so we're going to be helping to support the farm and other programs at some point.
Mm-hmm. How big is the garden?
Well, we've been given donated about a 2.5-acre property for a 5-year lease by a local family.
Great.
And so we're going to be farming as much of that as we can.
How are the gophers?
The gophers are fine, thank you. No, there's a big old jackrabbit that lopes across the property from time to time. There's a beautiful hawk that we see, and we have yet to decide how friendly we're going to be with these animals. But hopefully we can all live in... harmonious coexistence.
Last night I watched a great blue heron hunting gophers in West Petaluma.
Oh.
I had no idea.
Outstanding.
Isn't that excellent?
Maybe we need to import some
great
blue herons.
Great blue herons.
Yeah, an owl certainly. Mm-hmm. An owl will eat, from what I read. An owl will eat 300 gophers in a year.
Uh-huh.
So we like owls. I just thought about it because I was out visiting farms in western Sonoma County yesterday, and the amount of gopher holes on a couple of the farms was astonishing. You just got this feeling that all you are doing is walking on the roof of a great underground city
where
there's thousands of gophers hanging out in their little gopher bars and stuff. It was just
waiting for the goods.
Exactly. Yeah. Pulling down the garlic and, you know, God knows what. Well, that's really interesting. Why don't we take another musical break and come back and talk some more about community here on Mouthful.
Thank you. هر رگ من خون غم جاری است، در هر رگ من رگ من.
Presentation of Mouthful on KRCB is made possible by our members and by NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86-NET-BOOKS. Additional support for Mouthful is made possible by our members and by Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce. Serving brunch Saturday and Sunday, Peter Lowell's Cafe, online at PETERLOWELLS.com.
Yep, it's Mouthful. And, you know, something is interesting. Something interesting is going on. I notice it more, I think, this year than I have in years past. And I was actually having a discussion with some people about this yesterday. CSAs, a farm box, certainly seems to have finally sort of hit its time. And a lot of farmers are finding that a more productive and consistent way to make money than farmers markets. But yet at the same time, farmers markets seem to me to be providing what town squares provided at some point, and still do, say, in Europe. You're just your little neighborhood town square where everyone goes. And I know I look forward to my weekly farmers market as much for the socializing that I do nowhere else as I do for the wonderful produce I get there. So I'm just wondering if we can all reflect on what we, you, Seema, when you grew up in Tehran, right?
Oh, I grew up in Isfahan, which is okay. The second largest city in Iran, very close to Tehran. I am coming from a very educated family. By the time that I was born, my mom was a teacher at elementary school. And 10 years after that, when I was 10 years old, she became a principal of the same school. She is the owner, and yet the school is under her name. She is the owner of the first private girl school in Iran. Unfortunately, she died when she was very young, 31 years old. But during this time, she has taught me a lot about the life. She was in love with lots of different kind of art, like painting, gardening, you name it. She taught me education, not only the education of reading and writing ABC. The life education was very important to her. I do not remember, and I don't have a lot of memory from my mom. I have more memory from my dad, who is 81 years old and lives with me right now.
Oh, he does. He's here.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that.
He is a U.S. citizen. He lives with me, but as far as I remember, I have learned a lot from my mother. That is why I'm a good cook. And mm-hmm.
Did she cook?
She did cook mm-hmm. a lot, and she was training us to do some kind of gardening, uh-huh. by even though her time. Right now I'm doing gardening at my yard. I'm very happy, very successful with that, and it's a great joy. You go out and do your own gardening.
Oh, yeah. And what were the markets like when you were growing up?
Compared to today's market in the United States?
Or compared to what they're like today. I mean, I think markets in that part of the world, they're very different. I mean,
very
the ones
different.
Few I've been to, the big open spice markets with most fragrant spices, stalls and stalls of
fruit, vegetables,
you know,
right.
fresh chicken or
right.
live chickens.
Right.
Is that what?
It is still the same. In mm-hmm. Iran, people do not use as much as we use here frozen food. Mm-hmm. Or canned food. Even though now that I'm living here, the only time that I have to use the canned food is when I need to put tomato sauce.
Tomato,
that's the only
yep.
thing. The rest is always fresh.
Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up, Grayson?
I grew up in Los Angeles. And what I recall was, I think I was sort of a classic late 50s, 60s childhood, and did not do much nothing in the way of gardening. Mm-hmm. I did not know where my food came from. I remember frozen food, canned food, but I also remember my mom was one of these strange mothers who knew about brown rice.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
Which is kind of odd in that,
yeah,
in that time, you know.
Yeah, that definitely was so, not normal.
Yeah, kind of an unusual trend at that time.
So she must have been shopping.
She knew
at
something
like
about healthy food.
The health food stores, yeah. like Jack LaLanne people.
I don't know
were
about
into.
That. I don't know about that. But
I mean, that's sort of what I associated with health food stores back
that's
then.
Right, that, back then, that's what it was.
With
yeah.
Jack LaLanne's photograph on it.
That was health.
Yeah, that was health food.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So what did you think of her cooking then?
Well, she's a great cook, and like most women in that era, like we were just talking about a few minutes ago, it was a strange time. Mm-hmm. You know, the food system was really kind of coming into its own in terms of large-scale agribusiness, and mm-hmm. all of this convenience food was really kind of growing up with the advent of refrigeration after World War II. So it was a brave new world, and there was all this energy and media focus on convenience.
Yes, convenience and appliances.
Yeah, so that's
time-saving
really,
appliances and TV dinners. And
that was what I remember.
Lisa, where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Houston, which was and still is a big oil town. My parents are from Wisconsin, and my sister and I were just going through all the great dishes of our childhood. My mother's turning 70 tomorrow, and so we were compiling all of our great memories of her. And, you know, one of her all-star meals was taco salad, which was romaine lettuce, ground beef, nacho-flavored Doritos, and Thousand Island dressing. So, bless her heart. That, you know, that was the tops. And then my favorite was blueberry pancakes for dinner. So we had, she was and is a master of getting the dinner on the table every day for the family, you know, in a half an hour. And it was all frozen, and there wasn't, it didn't even dawn on them that anything could be different. And still, it's pretty much that same way. Mm-hmm. I was just there. So I got here and just went crazy gardening, and I started growing so much food. I ended up selling it, and I had my own little CSA. And then I ended up teaching gardening to kids in schools for years. Mm-hmm. And now I have a company that raises money for. It's called the School Garden Company. It raises money for school garden programs. So I went to the extreme other side. And when we get together, the Houston clan and me, you know, we're just very polite. And my mother, when she comes to Petaluma, I cook something, a simple little chicken, she'll say, "This is the best chicken I've ever had." Or, you know, everything she has, "This is the best salad I've ever had." But it doesn't, you know, Houston is a hostile environment, climate-wise, mm-hmm. as are a lot of places yeah. in the country. And so, you know, that idea of growing your own food, even being outside for a lot of people, it just doesn't make the connection. It's good. It's really good for me to live here and come from there. It's a great perspective.
Yeah, I bet. It makes you really, I mean, I always appreciate it. And I, you know, I've never taken it for granted being here.
Yeah.
But I bet it makes you appreciate it even more.
Even
coming
more.
From somewhere where it's, I was in Houston once for the night.
That's what everybody says.
The climate is oppressive. It always just blows my mind that so many people live there.
Yeah.
Because outdoor life is until like 10 or 11 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. and you go to a rib joint.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't like really live that way.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of air conditioning.
A lot of air conditioning.
So how did y'all, we know how you ended up here. How did you end up here?
In Petaluma or Sonoma County? My parents moved to Orange County. My dad was transferred when I was in high school, and they lived here for 5 years, and they wanted to move back to Houston because they liked that better. So I ended up going to college in San Francisco and stayed, got married and stayed. Uh-huh. And have been in Petaluma about 20 years.
Grayson, how'd you end up in the north?
Well, I escaped from L.A. right after high school and moved to San Francisco. And pretty much, with the exception of a few years in New York City, have lived all around the Bay Area, gradually working my way up north mm-hmm. to Petaluma for mm-hmm. the last 17, 18 years.
Mm-hmm. I lived in Petaluma when I first came here.
Uh-huh.
But I knew, you know, I was just chomping at the bit to get to Sonoma County when I graduated from high school. It was like I was, took me a little while to get here, but not that long. I knew from the time I was about 2 years old that I wanted to live in Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. And I always had some sort of connection, and then was finally able to do it.
I didn't even realize how great it was until I got here.
Yeah. It was a well-kept secret.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was a well-kept secret really until really the early 90s.
About the time we moved here.
Yeah. Yeah, it started being discovered, and then by the mid-90s, it really all broke open. And
yeah.
Everyone in the world wanted to be here, and they still do.
Yeah.
So it is. It does seem to be the center of the universe. Well, Seema, one of the things that you've done, and wanted to, you were talking to me when I was visiting you, some of the ways you get involved in community. And I wondered if you would talk a little bit about that.
Yes, one of my involvement is Rumi Karmon, that way mm-hmm. I'm a part of it. I also spend about 5 to 7% of my profit per year for the community. Either it goes to the health, medical health, or it will go to the education. I am a part of fundraising for different kind of elementary and high school.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they need some kind of auction or fundraising, I'm definitely a part of it. Besides that, there are two or three low-income family mm-hmm. that I take care of them per year.
You do?
By visiting them, and they know where I am whenever they need. Seema is there for them. I'm very happy to do that. There are two families yet in Salt Lake City, Utah. They are a part of low-income housing that yearly I'm helping them. Very proud of what I'm doing. I believe that somebody plant a tree for me, and it is time for me to plant for someone else.
Mo, what a sweet way to put it.
I do believe that community is supporting you, and you need to support the community. This connection is always there.
Mm. Now, you sometimes have little salon gatherings at your store, Rugs of Persia.
Mm.
You were telling me you cook some food and you invite
right.
people to check. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I do have different kind of show in my store. Sometimes I have a show for designers. Sometimes I have for the artists. Some other times I have only for the public to come, get some education about Persian rugs, get the education about the art of the Persian rugs, and also have some Persian food, which is what I love to do, to get to know the culture. To know that whatever you hear about Iran on the media mm-hmm. Is different from Iranian people who live in this community. It's two different things to think about it. I have made a lot of friends in this community, Sonoma County. I have a lot of friends coming even though from Marin County to my shows whenever mm-hmm. I have it. A few from Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Not long time ago, somebody came to my store as a friend and said, Seema, you make a lot of money here. I said, definitely I do. And she said, tell me about it. I said, I am very rich by the friends. I have made many friends in this business. My belief is that money comes and goes. Friends are the one who stay in your life. So my investment is not on the money. My investment is on the community and the people. And I had been very successful.
Mm-hmm. So, Grayson, you were talking about part of what you are hoping to accomplish with what you're doing is to sort of shift the food system in Petaluma. And I'm wondering what sort of general community, you know, not so much the community that you're actually working with, but the broader community. What sort of both involvement and response are you getting?
Well, one of our strategies, our key strategies, is to, from the beginning, was to create programs and opportunities that give everybody in Petaluma a chance from different divergent perspectives, give them a chance to participate in some way. And for some, it's just learning about the fact that there is such a thing as a food system
mm-hmm.
and that the way that food system works has really profound implications for the kind of food they can eat, the kind of food their neighbors are able to eat, and for the health of the environment and our local economy, for that mm-hmm. matter. And we're really interested in engaging folks in whatever way they are interested and capable of participating. Mm-hmm. So for some, it's donating fresh fruit and vegetables. For some, it's volunteering. It's driving. For some, it's working on the farm. A lot of folks are really enjoying working at our work days at the gardens and the farm. Mm-hmm. Several have said how therapeutic it is. And that's just something that's missing for a lot of people, yeah. And doing it with their neighbors.
With other people. Yeah. If somebody listening wants to get involved, what do they do?
Well, probably the easiest thing is to go to our website at www.petalumabounty.org.
So petalumabounty.org.
Yeah, and okay. We've got a calendar, uh-huh. a web-based calendar with events and activities coming up.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah, so the June 14th date is our anniversary, and we're going to have a community picnic and Strawberry Shortcake Festival.
Oh, how fun.
From noon to 3 at La Tercera Park on the east side of Petaluma. Uh-huh. And everyone is welcome.
Oh, that's a great thing. And so you can find out details about that at petalumabounty.org.
That's right.
Excellent. And Seema, tell people it's 101 Montgomery.
It is 101 Montgomery Drive, cross the street of the Creekside Medical Plaza in Santa Rosa. And to know more about Persian Rugs and more about me, you can log in at www.rugsofpersia.com.
Okay, and before you go, are there any good Persian restaurants in the Bay Area?
Oh, yes, there are. One of them is in San Rafael. It's called Alborz, A-L-B-E-R-Z. The other one is Mekadeh in San Francisco.
Oh, on Green Street in North Beach. I know
right,
Mekadeh. Mekadeh
right.
Is wonderful.
They both make very well.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
So the first one is Alborz?
Alborz.
Alborz in
and Alborz
San Rafael.
Alborz is located in San Rafael, right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're
thanks to all
welcome.
Of you for coming.
It's
no,
awesome.
It's the end
thank
of
you
us.
For having us.
Indulgent hot weekend, so I appreciate you being here.
Thanks,
I appreciate you tuning into Mouthful. Next week, we have some folks from a Round Barn Winery and a production facility. They grow their own olives. They have a traditional press for crushing their olive, for making their olive oil. They also grow citrus. They grow blood oranges, Meyer lemons, all organic. They make infused oils, and they're also one of the only producers of the traditional Orleans style of vinegar, which they do all at the winery. So I have a lot of questions about how they pull that off, and I think it should make for a fascinating hour. So tune in next week to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, and in the meantime, have a great week.
I'm writing about the book I read. I have to sing about the book I read.
Okay, so here's the deal. I like animals and I like meat, and I am smart enough to know that they are one and the same, or at least the latter used to be the former not so very long ago. Therein lies what writer Michael Pollan calls the omnivore's dilemma. How in this age, where we know exactly how cruel and unhealthy our modern industrial meat system has become, can we keep chowing down on chops and chicken and shoveling in the steaks? Maybe you've wondered the same thing. Well then, sheep farmer Catherine Friend's new book, The Compassionate Carnivore, is the book for you. Its subtitle is How to Keep Animals Happy, Save Old MacDonald's Farm, Reduce Your Hoofprint, and Still Eat Meat. Honestly, when I'm in the grocery store and I look at a package of non-organic chicken from one of the major conventional chicken producers, a little red flashing sign goes off in my head, and here's what it says. This chicken is hormone-laced, antibiotic-laden, possibly carcinogenic. It's the remains of an animal that was fed genetically modified corn and kept in a dark, hot, shoebox-sized cage its whole miserable life. Yum, that makes me hungry. Catherine Friend felt the same way. That's why she and her partner Melissa started Rising Moon Farm, a small, sustainable sheep ranch in Minnesota. She detailed her transformation from city gal to shepherd in an earlier book called Hit by a Farm. Friend is a funny, tender, thoughtful writer, and a forgiving sort of person with a good ear for irony. When she writes that farmers are now only 0.2% of the population, she comments, "Wow, and I thought being a lesbian made me a member of a minority." friend has some concerns about the health effects of modern meat, but her real problem is more philosophical. She's opposed to animal cruelty and takes issue with the lunacy involved in applying what she calls the widget model of production to living beings. No one doubts that industrial production makes for cheaper meat, but this works only if you don't count the costs in terms of animal misery and if you externalize onto the broader society the other costs, like water pollution from feedlots and the decreasing effectiveness of antibiotics caused by the constant low dosing of farm animals. Friend is as compassionate to her readers as she is to her farm animals. In fact, probably more so since she doesn't have her readers trucked off to a slaughterhouse at the end of the year. She understands that changing how you eat is hard, and she thinks it works better if you approach it piecemeal. If you wish to make the lives of farm animals better, she suggests that you do that not by stepping away from the table altogether, as vegetarians do, but by using your meat-buying power to shape the practices of the people who raise farm animals. Her book is filled with suggestions about how you might do this, from buying organic, sustainably raised meat to joining a meat cooperative that supports small local farmers. She even provides a handy cheat sheet of questions you might want to ask a local farmer should you ever locate one. And, realizing that very few people know any farmers, she provides a list of resources to help you here as well. Vegetarians will be unconvinced by Catherine Friend's new book, but this compassionate carnivore found it food for thought. This is Laura Hager for Mouthful. Na, 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 na.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from KRCB radio members and from the Sebastopol Farmers Market, now open in the downtown Sebastopol Plaza every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with organic, sustainable, locally produced fruits, vegetables, meats, and cheeses, plus breakfast, lunch, and local musicians. Support also comes from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce. Serving brunch Saturday and Sunday, Peter Lowell's Cafe online at peterlowells.com. Support also comes from NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86-NETBOOKS. Listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Listen to